IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Playing Catch Up Podcast, powered by Unleashed, where each couple of weeks, we'll be catching up on the women's lacrosse landscape. I'm Hallie Griggs, IL's Women's Director, joined by fellow Cuse grad, Alyssa Murray Cometti. We just missed each other at Syracuse. She graduated in 2014. She was a three-time first-team All-American there and a two-time Wharton finalist. Team captain led Syracuse to two, Alyssa, I think, national championship games?
Yes.
And played on the U.S. national team from 2014 to 2017. She played in the UWLX for the Philadelphia Force and led them to a championship in 2018. Right now, she's the Iron Horse Austin Girls Program Director and the Vandergrift High School Program Director and varsity head coach. And the two of us love all things orange. So we had to invite former Princeton Tiger Rachel Becker to Techo to host as well. Rachel graduated from Princeton in 2003, played both field hockey and lacrosse, was a two-time national champ, defender of the year, Honda Award winner, three-time All-American, and perhaps most famously, she's the lone defender to ever hoist the Tewaratan Trophy. She played for Team USA from 2003 to 2008, helping the U.S. to a silver medal. She helped launch the WPLL, and she's currently the head of PLL Academy. Today is her one-year anniversary there. And aside from that, she's a rock star mom that Alyssa and I are learning a lot from. And we'll probably continue to pick your brain as years come. But I'm excited to be here. Guys, thanks so much for joining the podcast team.
So excited to be here.
So I guess before we get started, you know, this is something that we've been talking about for a little while here at the Inside Lacrosse team. We don't really have a dedicated women's game podcast to cover the action we're seeing each week. We decided to call it Playing Catch Up because that's exactly what we're going to be doing. So I guess, you know, we've touched base extensively, just texting each other throughout games and catching up week in and week out. You know, one thing that I think we can all just start with was the poll this week. You know, I think the poll, especially the media poll, coming out of this weekend is pretty indicative of where, you know, the lacrosse landscape has settled right now. North Carolina's on top, received every single first place vote. Alyssa, you wrote about them in your poll. Do you think anyone can take away the number one spot from Carolina the way they're playing right now?
At this point, I honestly don't. I think UNC is just so dominant. I'm looking forward to seeing them play, you know, more of the ACC competition and see if anyone can take them down. But, you know, just across the board in all positions, they're so deep. I think this weekend of Scotty Rose Grounie not being able to play the rest of the game and then them just inserting another attacker and not missing a beat is proof that, you know, they have plenty of weapons.
And Rachel, you know, what sets this team apart? You know, we talk about their offensive depth. You're kind of the defensive specialist of all of us. I feel like they have the best defense in the country, too.
You can certainly make an argument for that, led by Emma Trenchard, preseason defender of the year, who's just an incredible lockdown defender. We can't forget Moreno in goal. I mean, she's fourth in the country in save percentage and is just a really strong leader back there. And to what Alyssa said, their depth is really incredible. I mean, we didn't even mention Wurzberger, Kerrigan Miller. The list for them just goes on and on. So I really think it's going to be difficult to top Carolina this year.
And you look at that depth, you know, you mentioned Moreno. When North Carolina played Florida in particular, that's where I feel like I really honed in on how valuable Moreno is. Florida did everything they could. I was so impressed with the Gators, especially defensively. And I think in years past, Florida's high-flying offense has kind of been their showstopper. But Sarah Resnick was standing on her head in goal. She had 59% saves for Florida. But Taylor Moreno on the other side of the field had 69% saves. You know, she turns away 11 balls every single time Florida made a stop defensively and got the ball in their offense. Moreno was there to shut the door. I love the way Carolina was playing. And we got to see them twice this weekend. They've kind of been doubling up their weekend games. On Friday was a wet mess. You know, Alyssa, you broke that game down. What did you see out of Carolina versus Duke in particular that you think helped them hold on to that win?
I think UNC did a better job of adjusting to the elements where, you know, in a wet game like that, you know, quick change of direction dodges might not be your bread and butter, where maybe a downhill dodge where you're just getting a head full of steam and going hard to cage will work better, or more cutting, like, which plays right into what they do best. But, you know, having one person just take it to cage and try and do a roll dodge, like, you're going to be on ice skates real quick when it's as wet as it was. And so I think Duke had a couple of just unforced errors in that sense where, you know, they're just wiping out, which is a tough break, obviously, but you have to play to the elements. And I think UNC did a better job of adjusting to that and playing into what was going to work that night.
And Rachel, you called it a flex that Duke changed their uniforms at halftime. How did you
know? I was watching the game, and at halftime, you know, Duke comes out in these all black uniforms, and I thought, you know, obviously it felt like a little bit of gameplay there. Some fresh, dry, all black unis. And I think mentally it probably had more of an impact than physically, with that rain that was so torrential. They probably only stayed dry for 5 minutes, but I've never seen a team do that and really kind of come out in a completely different uniform. So, you know, I think it helped them for a little bit of time, but certainly UNC is just so powerful. They just continued to wear Duke down. As Alyssa said, the elements certainly played a part. The turnovers were higher than average because it was just so wet and everybody was slipping. But UNC, they're just like, they just keep coming. And I think eventually it just wore that Duke defense down.
It wore them down. Didn't matter what uniforms Duke was wearing. I love it. Would like to point out there is no rain up in the Carrier Dome, which is where we're heading next. Syracuse is continuing to really, I think, set themselves apart from the best of the rest. You know, I think that the Cues have a good shot. I like their matchup versus Carolina. We won't see that for a few weeks. They were playing up in their dome opener without Emily Aaronchuk. She has been sidelined due to a lower body injury. That is what Syracuse's statement is right now here on the podcast. You know, we respect an athlete's privacy. We're not going to speculate anything about their injury. You know, we are keeping our fingers crossed, wishing her the best. But, you know, taking nothing away from Aaronchuk, because I could talk about her all day long. I think she's been such a special leader. She's an incredible player that is just, you know, she puts everything she has into every play. And I've loved watching her play. But they didn't miss a beat. And I think it really, that has a lot to do with how much they respect their captain. You know, I think that a lot of these Syracuse players dug down deep and did what they could. They knew that there was a hole they had to fill. And I loved the poise and composure that they showed in Harris Chuck's absence. You know, I think that Stony Brook came out firing, but I loved the intensity that Syracuse matched. And Rachel, you were blown away by Asa Goldstaff.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously not having Harris Check from a mental perspective for that team, she's such a leader. She's such an incredible athlete. And I really felt like Asa Goldstaff stepped up. I mean, such a key position and goal, just mentally trying to carry that team. I just really impressed with how she sort of attacked that Stony Brook attack. Obviously, Stony Brook has Allie Kennedy, Taryn Ullmiller, a really strong attack unit, and I was just really impressed with Goldstock's composure and just her ability to really shut them down and bring that lift to the team. I'm sure it was on their minds that Emily wasn't playing, and just really impressed with Syracuse's ability to kind of work through that and step up in Emily's absence.
And Alyssa, obviously, you know, you and I were watching, we were texting each other back and forth. What really impressed you about Syracuse's composure offensively to get the job done without Emily?
I mean, I think their ability to just share the ball. Obviously, we know Stony Brook plays in a zone, and it's in a pretty aggressive zone as well. And just the plan and the discipline to not keep the ball on your stick, not let the ball die, because as soon as that happens, it just gives Stony Brook more time to, you know, lock down in the zone at that, wherever the ball is. And so I thought that was super impressive. And, you know, something that I didn't really notice or realize until after the fact is the top scorers on Syracuse have hardly missed this season. I think Sam Swart is 8 for 8 on the season right now, which is just absurd. And obviously that's not something you're going to continue the whole season. No one expects you to never miss a shot. But in big games like that, like Loyola and Stony Brook, it plays a huge role because, you know, not only are you just not missing a shot wide, you're not giving it back to the goalie to start the clear the other direction. And I think that just takes a lot of wind out of the other team's sails. So they're shooting awesome. They're taking great wealth plan shots from a lot of different players. And, you know, that consistency is key, especially when, you know, your ringer wasn't able to put in her normal 4 goals that she scores every game. So while that's, you know, a missing piece to your game, I think they all stepped up in a big way.
Yes, just a casual 4 goals a game. When you say it like that, that's insane.
I'm not kidding. It's every game. I'm like, what?
It is. It is. The, you know, another place that Harrison, at no surprise, to hear such tremendous hands. She's been so key for Syracuse on the draw circle. And I think, you know, you mentioned the Meg Show down there, you know, Sierra Cockrell, Sam Swart, they had big days offensively. But on the draw circle, usually when the matchups aren't working out with Morgan Whitner, Emily Harris stepped in, and she wasn't able to, but I was really impressed with Caitlin Wisniewski. You know, she came in off the bench, grabbed 7 draw controls, and it was game-changing. You know, I thought her ability to step up on the draw gives Syracuse multiple looks. You know, we know it's such a battle each draw possession. So to give Syracuse an option outside from Morgan Whitner, obviously established herself as a quite the specialist in there. I thought that, you know, Wisniewski's ability to step up was awesome. And then I also just love the way the Syracuse defense plays. And I think that that's just, you know, this defensive zone, it's the brainchild of Caitlin Deepley, who ironically used to be Stony Brook's associate head coach. But I feel like this defense last year, we saw a little bit of it, but they're just operating like a well-oiled machine. I love the way that Sarah Cooper plays that kind of backer, rover position. She's everywhere. You know, this is a team that's rarely getting called for 3 seconds with a zone defense. They're communicating, and they're flying off the handle. So the minute a Stony Brook player has the ball offensively, they have players like Sam Swart. You know, you talk about her. I love the energy she brings defensively, too. Or Ella Simpkins, Grace Fahey, Carrie DeFleece. I love the way this defense is playing, and I can't wait to see their matchups further down the road, in particular to the ACC. But, you know, looking down the list at this poll, the first non-ACC team, pretty high up, number 3, Northwestern. They're led by Izzy Skane. They're calling her the Skane train. I'm loving that. I'm totally on the Skane train right now. I just have been obsessed with the way she played since her freshman year. But I think this year, what makes this team so impressive, and Alyssa, you talked about it in your UNC Duke column this weekend, there's so much depth alongside of her too.
Right. I mean, I just think Izzy Skane uses her body so well when she's dodging in the cage. If you're not going to slide to her, then she's probably going to just body you up on her way. She kind of dodges like, similarly to Kayla Traynor in some sense, where, you know, she's able to shoot around just one defender and make it a pretty awesome shot. So the Skane train and K train works out pretty well, because I think those are the only 2 train nicknames that we have for the women's lacrosse players, and it's very fitting. So I think if you're not sliding to Izzy Skane, you're going to be either scored on or it's just not going to go well for you. And if you do, then you have, you know, McCone, Gilbert, and Mueller that are all ready to step up. And, you know, they're all solid, all-American potential players.
And, Rachel, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you're the only one of the 3 of us that hasn't been on the receiving end of just like a Northwestern smackdown, because I don't think they had a program.
They did not. Yeah, I'm not sad about that. Although Kelly Monty was my roommate in World Cup, and so we played together. So I've got plenty of Kelly Monty smacks. SmackDown, but none from Northwestern. So, yeah, I mean, she just continues to create these incredible teams that are so deep. And, you mentioned Sammy Mueller, like, transferring from Virginia, and just, like, a real leader on the field. And I think I'm excited to see how their season progresses.
Yeah, it's, those SmackDowns were fun. But you talk about depth, and it really does. Like, back in my day, their starting lineup, Kristen Kelman, Hannah Nielsen, Hillary Bowen, Meredith Frank, down the line, Katrina Dowd, Danielle Spencer. I mean, they had scary, scary depth and a lot of individual talent. But I think the thing about Northwestern always made them special. And again, Callie Monty Hiller, she's just such a special coach. The way she gets so much talent to play unselfishly alongside of one another. And I do think that this team, the depth they possess, it is reminiscent of, the teams back then. You look at their top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 scorers, they're all America talent. And defensively, they're playing well too. They haven't had a single opponent, granted we're 3 games in, but get to double digit scoring. So, their defense has been locked down. They take on Penn State this weekend. Again, it's the Big Ten doubleheader. We'll get to the Big Ten scheduling in a little bit. But Penn State, back in the top 5, a really young team. I love the young, the young gun movement happening in Happy Valley. Rachel, what are you thinking about? We talked about Northwestern, but the rest of the Big Ten, starting with Penn State, Maryland right on their heels. What impresses you about those two teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously I'm a little biased, but Penn State's incredibly well coached by Missy Holmes Doherty, my coach at Princeton, and I think they're just scrappers. I mean, and that's always sort of been who Penn State is, what their identity is. You can just never count them out. I think she's got some great talent this year. The Big Ten is really interesting. We'll get to it later, but there's some up and coming teams that wouldn't have been in the mix previously that are gonna compete this year. Rutgers, Ohio State. So I'm excited to see where the Big Ten sort of nests out. But certainly Penn State and Maryland are two of the top there behind Northwestern.
And Alyssa, we talk about obviously Penn State. You're a little bit more familiar with Maryland. We never
played Penn State. Very familiar.
But we played Maryland every year. We played Maryland. You played them quite a few times.
Yeah, I think obviously you can never count Maryland out. They had 2 solid wins against Michigan. And I think the Big Ten, like you guys are both saying, is just kind of interesting this year in the sense that we have so many different programs that are beating one another. Michigan went down against Ohio State, and then Ohio State just lost both games to Rutgers. And it's just like a big question mark of who's going to come out on top. I think Northwestern is obviously the favorite, but between Penn State and the rest of them, it's all just a big question mark on how it's all going to unfold. But I've always learned never count Maryland out.
Unfortunately, that is a lesson that has been learned.
by all of us.
By all of us, right?
Anybody that played lacrosse in the 90s to now, 80s really, I guess, has been victimized by Maryland personally, I'm sure.
Okay, yeah. Personal victim. We should start a self-help group.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't great. I was in the Jen Adams stage, so she really.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yep. Oh my goodness.
I'm so sorry.
This is our self-help group. back on the Big Ten scheduling train. We're only seeing the Big Ten play one another this year, so we've seen a number of conferences kind of intercompete. But we won't get the opportunity to see any of these Big Ten teams play anyone outside of their conference until the postseason. I think for me, to start off, you look at Ohio State, Rutgers, Michigan, these teams that are kind of battling it out, middle of the pack right now, at least for media poll voting, it's tough to kind of figure out where to rank them because we're not seeing the traditional matchups that they have against, maybe the Virginias, the James Madisons, the Towsons. Do you think that the Big Ten scheduling in reference to those teams is hurting them or helping them?
I mean, I think, Hallie, we've talked about the, potential of it being going either way. Northwestern just coming up to the ACC in an eventual postseason would be – kind of a shock for all the ACC teams. I feel like by the end of the season, all the ACC teams are going to really know each other all very well. And so just to see a brand new face is going to be pretty difficult. But at the same time, there's always the potential to get complacent and, you know, feel pretty good about yourself and then go and play these ACC teams that we know are really strong and come out a little flat. So it's a big, again, another big question mark, but I do think that could potentially play in Northwestern's favor just because we all know Kelly Monty-Hiller is not one to allow for complacency.
And Rachel, what are your thoughts on this Big Ten schedule?
Yeah, I think strategically it's going to be really interesting for these coaches because they won't get to see Virginia or UNC and get that rep in with them, you know, and then adjust their plan based on sort of the first time they play them. Usually we see these teams playing each other twice, maybe three times, you know, when it comes to NCAA. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of the scouting is going to have to be really different this year because you just don't know how your team will adjust and what might work and what might not work. So I think them only playing each other for now is very helpful because they're getting their games in. But come NCAAs, I think it could be a real challenge for the Big Ten, you know, if they don't get to play outside the conference.
I agree. You know, I think for me, it's almost just like for any team, I think that the fact that you might not see Northwestern, granted, you can watch all the film you want, but until the steam train's coming down the middle of the eighth, and you have to step in front of her and shut her down, and you haven't seen that all season, that's going to be tough for any team. I think if any of the teams in the Big Ten that this does benefit, it is Northwestern because they are so strong this year. The fact that North Carolina and Syracuse and Notre Dame and Duke, you know, a lot of these teams are going to be seeing each other twice during the regular season, maybe once in the ACC tournament. And then who knows again in the NCAA tournament. You know, it's crazy to think that some of these teams this year could match up four times and then have to, you know, step in cold and play against a team as powerful as Northwestern that you haven't seen on the field. So I think that certainly is going to, I think, play in Northwestern's favor. But then on the other side, it is really fun kind of seeing, and we're going to see in the ACC too, you know, the doubleheader is interesting. It's something that we've never really seen. I know some Pac-12 schools have played each other twice during the regular season, but we've never seen this like Friday, Sunday. You really get a day of rest in the between and try to figure out, you know, as a coach, that's like the gameplay. Like, do you show all your cards on Friday? Do you hold a few things back, save them for Sunday? It's really fun to kind of, at least in the first Big Ten doubleheader weekend, to see kind of how coaches approach the matchup. And I'm excited to kind of see that ride out in multiple conferences moving forward. You know, I think one, the most glaring omission from the poll, when we go back to kind of what we're slated to talk about today, Rachel, no Princeton, no Penn, no Dartmouth, no Cornell. You know, there's no Ivies currently playing. There's no Ivies in the poll. So you're seeing 3 to 4 new teams in the media poll, and that's, in my opinion, no coincidence. What are your thoughts on, is the Ivy playing a huge role in teams like Rutgers and teams like, you know, Hofstra pushing for recognition?
Absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, obviously biased here, but my heart just breaks for these athletes and coaches in the Ivy League. You know, it's got to be so difficult to watch these other teams play and compete for a championship. And, you know, these teams are still, you know, able to practice minimally, hoping that they get approved for some local play. You know, and I just think about the mindset of these coaches and how incredible it is for them to keep these women motivated and sort of locked in, knowing that they may be working towards another lost season. So, for the athletes in the Ivy League, you know, it's just really tough just thinking of them and kind of what their experience is right now versus probably what they anticipated when they got there. But I just want to give kudos to these coaches and athletes in the Ivy League who are absolutely making the best of a pretty difficult situation. You know, in terms of affecting the rest of the NCAA, absolutely. I mean, the Ivy teams, you know, at least 3 to 4 now are competing nationally every year. So you don't have them in the mix. And certainly I think it's allowing some other programs, like you said, Rutgers, Hofstra, to really step up and get some national recognition.
And Alyssa, some new teams in the poll, you know, in the absence of some of those teams that we traditionally see, UMass, Towson, you know, Navy's back in, Hofstra, Drexel. Of any of these new teams cracking into receiving votes during the poll, does anyone catch your eye more than the other?
I think we've got to give Jill DePetris a little shout out for Drexel. Just, you know,
absolutely.
Two convincing wins. I think she's doing an awesome job with the program right now. And, you know, showing, back when she was at Bryant, she had led them to conference championships. And now at Drexel and kind of doing the same thing and building it from just the moment that she got on campus. And so I think that is probably one of the biggest names to be receiving votes right now, just with two convincing wins in 1 week.
I want to echo what Alyssa said. I'm so impressed with Jill DePetris Batchelor and her staff. I got to see them play Penn last year before things shut down, and they were such a strong team, and you could just tell how bright the future was going to be with that program. I think that they're on, you know, a really great trajectory, and they're going to continue to be in the conversation the next few years here.
Did you guys see this clip that she posted? One, I'm like the biggest DePetris family fan. I have a daughter of my own, I feel like I need to call Mary DePetris and ask her how she raised four amazing, kind, incredible young women. But there was a clip. St. Joe's Drexel, games in overtime, Drexel scores in OT, and Jill's celebration on the sideline. She, like, rips her jacket off. She's jumping up and down. Like, I just loved it. Like, made me want to cry. I love seeing a coach celebrate her players the way that Jill did when Drexel scored that game-winning goal. So it was so fun watching that game. And then, of course, kind of exploding past Georgetown. I agree. Drexel's on the fly right now.
So I saw that when I was watching the game, and I saw this person jumping and throwing their jacket, and I was like, wow, I wonder if that's Jill. But then I was like, no, I feel like that's probably a player. And then she put it on her Instagram, and she's like, oh my gosh, my celebration. And I just lost it. I was messaging her saying, I was wondering if that was you, because it was unbelievable. But yeah, she was jacked up, and it's like, who doesn't want to play for a coach that is that passionate?
Yeah, I'd love to imagine, like, Gary or Joe Selena taking her suit jacket off. And
she said that she was like Jim Boeheim throwing his jacket, but I think it was in opposite reactions. He was angry and she was happy.
Oh, that was amazing. No, it was so fun to watch. And I, you know, kind of to Georgetown then, you know, brings us into the next thing we wanted to talk about, just the COVID craziness that's happening and how COVID-19 is impacting each team, each week, each day. You know, to start, these athletes are experiencing something that the three of us never had to experience. The overall athlete experience now, you know, there's no tailgates. You know, really a lot of them are limited. They're not allowed in their locker rooms. They're playing in front of no fans for the most part. They're so disciplined. Every single day they know that every decision they make could affect their team's ability to play and practice and do what they love. Rachel, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, what you said, it has me a little speechless, honestly. I think about the college athlete experience and how incredible it is and how much there's, you know, togetherness and community. And obviously their on-field play is affected, but, you know, their experience overall in college is affected. Like you said, they aren't able to gather, you know, as a team. They can't just sort of go to class normally or go to parties normally. It's just every decision they make has an impact far beyond what we would have been used to. And I think that stress has to be weighing on these kids. I mean, every move you make, you have to really think, could this potentially lead, it could absolutely lead to your team being shut down. So there's a mental aspect, but also the physical aspect. I mean, we saw it in the Australian Open, the athletes that were quarantined did not do very well. And we're seeing it a little bit with these teams coming out of quarantine who weren't on campus in the fall or had limited ability to be together in the fall. You know, so there's a mental aspect, but also the physical. It's really difficult on these kids to stay in shape and also be clicking as a team when they haven't had a lot of rest together.
Alyssa, you're the young gun of all of us. You know, could you imagine this being your college experience?
Oh my gosh, my heart hurts for them. My husband and I talk about it all the time. We were in college at the same time together. And, you know, such a big part of being in college and bonding with your teammates is being social. And, you know, some of my favorite memories are of us just being silly in the locker room all together and, you know, hanging out with our families at tailgates and, you know, just such valuable memories that we will eventually get back to. But exactly what you guys are saying, it takes so much discipline and so much, you know, maturity to hold back and know that this is just a temporary time, even though it seems like the longest temporary time of all time, to just make smart decisions and know that every move you make can really affect your team's future and your individual future.
And right now, you know, there's a number of teams that are experiencing quarantine and, you know, individuals on certain teams, but there's a pair of teams in the top ten right now that we haven't seen for weeks. And it's Notre Dame and Florida. You know, we haven't seen them take the field where we've been able to see some of their biggest competitors of late. Rachel, how do you anticipate, you know, those teams and a number of other teams kind of coming out of that quarantine? You referenced the Australian Open. That's tough.
Yeah, I think it could go either way, and I don't think we'll know until these teams get out of quarantine. You know, based on their ability to kind of sort of rebound from being shut down for 2 weeks. You know, they both are very well coached teams, very strong athletes, and people we expected to be in the mix. So, you know, cautiously optimistic for them, but you really just don't know the toll that could be taken on these teams.
And Alyssa, you know, we talk about Notre Dame, Florida, you know, that big question mark of how do they bounce back? How do they come out? We've already seen some teams come out, and it's definitely kind of like, you know, dusting off the cobwebs. You know, what have you seen out of certain teams in Michigan, JMU, teams that have been in quarantine that have come out? How have they kind of come out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it's tough coming out without practicing like you normally would before a game. No matter what you're doing, it's going to be different. I thought Michigan had great moments against Maryland on their field, which is obviously, you know, it's an advantage to be playing on that AstroTurf for Maryland because no one else has it, or not many teams that I'm aware of. But they came out and, you know, it fell a little flat. It just a little inconsistent. It felt like every time they got a little momentum, they gave up a couple goals, and then they would fight back, and then they gave up a couple more goals. And so, you know, there's definitely some promise there, and you see that they're all super athletic and fit, and it's just a matter of time before they figure it out. But definitely a tough way to come back is dropping those two games to Maryland. But, you know, it's how else you're in quarantine. It definitely is a huge challenge.
And we saw that in JMU, you know, really like one of the matchups that has been my favorite to watch over the years. And again, it's a non-conference matchup. I love that JMU and North Carolina traditionally schedule each other kind of right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. It served as a little preview a few years ago when JMU went on that title run. But it was a matchup we didn't get to see this year. That game was postponed. Virginia Tech was postponed. JMU came out of quarantine and held on for a 10-9 win over High Point. You know, I do think, you know, what you said about Michigan rings true, I think, for all of these teams, you know, especially for Notre Dame, for Maryland. You know, if there is that time where you're finding your footing again, you know, practice and these types of games and competition, you'll get right back into it. And it's certainly early in the season. But we're going to watch this play in effect, you know, every single week. I think for the IL Women's Scoreboard, we are. We're rescheduling games. So this game is postponed. Or, you know, to Stony Brook's credit, you know, with USC, kind of their game with UNH getting postponed, you know, USC was looking for another opponent. North Carolina, to fill that JMU game, Stony Brook went down. So it is, we're kind of seeing these last-minute additions where, you know, your hat goes off to the coaches, the athletic administration, the players for pivoting and kind of, I think the theme of COVID is doing whatever you have to do. So we've seen that. You know, we've also seen the teams that, you know, haven't necessarily been in quarantine, but Loyola, they were limited, very limited in their fall, you know, basically to no contact drills. Georgetown, a number of their players, I don't think any of them, you know, they were on campus. They weren't practicing this fall. So, you know, we're seeing those types of hurdles. We're seeing this play a challenge, and I think we're going to see it, you know, the whole way through.
I agree.
Now, so I guess just flipping the page a little bit, the Tuwarhan race, it's early. I feel like it's always so early to talk about this, but it's so fun to talk about at the same time. we'll change it up a little bit, because I do think that, you know, certain players, even last year or the year before, really established themselves to be in this conversation. To our resident Tuwarhan winner of the podcast, you know, we'll start on the defensive end, the goalies, you know, who are your picks on the defensive end that you think could really, you know, vie for the Tuwarhan come first season?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I'd love to see defenders get some more love. Was super pumped for Meg Taylor. You just kind of love to see the other side of the ball get some love and some credit. My top three right now, obviously no surprise, Emma Trenchard, preseason defender of the year. She's got 9 ground balls, 4 cause turnovers, and 4 ground balls already. I mean, she's just a leader on that defensive unit, and I think has a real shot, you know, as UNC continues on this run. Next up, we have Lizzie Colson from Maryland, redshirt senior after an ACL tear in 2020. So a real comeback story that I really appreciate. I think, you know, used to be an attacker, got moved to defense, and it's just dominating. I mean, in only 3 games, 9 calls turnovers, 6 draw controls, and 5 ground balls. You know, those stats on that defensive end are just incredible. And then last but not least, you know, Asa Goldstock. Just really impressed, you know, with her composure, her poise early on. You know, she's one of the athletes that came back to play one more season. You know, she's a grad student at Syracuse. And I just think for the women that have had the opportunity to come back and have that last season, you can just sort of see and feel that fire that they are giving everything they have. And Goldstock is no exception. I'm excited to see, you know, Cuse run out the rest of their season.
I love those picks. I feel like I have been on the Trenchard train too, but even though we don't call her Steam Train, Trenchard Train, I love some of the new nickname, but I like tweeted the other day, I really think that she has just put herself in the conversation to hoist the Tuwarhan Trophy. And Rachel, your buddy John Bird was not happy that I said that. He was like, Rachel needs to remain the one and only. She needs to get off the Trenchard Train.
He's very protective of that, being the one and only on the boys and girls side, and I love him for that, and I love that recognition. But I want more than that. I want defenders to kind of be put in the spotlight and kind of get the recognition that they've all earned, because defense is awesome. And I think you know, when you're coaching young girls, everybody wants to be an attacker. And, you know, I look forward to days when people are fighting to be defenders. So the more that we can support Emma Trenchard and Lizzie Colson and Asa Goldstock, we'll get these young girls trying to D up here in middle school and high school.
I love that. It is. It's so hard when you're like, okay, attack over here, midfield over here, defense over here. You always have like the one or two girls to straggle over. But just, I think that it is. Like when you see these players, especially now the game is so visible, and on a lot of these broadcasts, you know, the defensive players are getting praised. And so I do think that, you know, that does trickle down. And hopefully we do see more of those girls. Yes, I like that. So I'm their resident, never been to Tuwarhan finalist, or certainly winner. So I am going to take the midfielders, just because that's what I played, before Alyssa kind of hacked that piece on the end with her attack pick. You know, looking at a few, I think no-brainers, you know, a couple, Allie Kennedy, you know, she is certainly she's a beast. I mean, that's really the word I use to describe her. She's an integral part of Stony Brook's success. She's in every facet of every play for that team. You know, she looks like she doesn't tire out there, too. You know, we've seen her go now, you know, head-to-head with North Carolina, Syracuse, the two top teams in the country. She's been really the premier midfielder on the field. Right now, she has 11 goals, 1 assist, 12 ground balls, 33 draw controls in 4 games. So she's not on the circle. You know, she's fighting for that ball off circle. She's trying to, you know, disrupt that specialist when they're trying to draw it to themselves. I think in the midfield conversation, middie of the year, she's leading that conversation. But another middie that I do think is kind of a dark horse in the conversation I love the way Olivia Dirks is playing. She's the sophomore out of Penn State. I think that she's a huge reason why we're seeing Penn State crack the top five. She has 7 goals, 1 assist, 13 draws right now in 3 games. We're about to see her go head-to-head, back-to-back with Northwestern. So I'm excited to see kind of how she can lead her team. You know, and then there's a pair of players. You know, this is traditionally a midfield-heavy award, right? You know, we've seen Taylor Cummings win 3 times, Katie Schwartzman twice, Caitlin McFadden, Kristen Chelman. This is an award that is traditionally, more often than not, gone to the middie. And we haven't seen Andy Aldave since Notre Dame's first game of the season. She went out early with an injury, didn't return to the field, you know, promising she walked herself off the field. But we haven't seen her play. We've seen Shannon Kavanaugh in pretty limited capacity because Florida hasn't been on since their quarantine. And, you know, you look at a player, Sammy Mueller, I think she's still trying to get adjusted into a new system. I love the way Kerrigan Miller and Allie Mascheroni are playing together down at Chapel Hill, but I think it might be too early to tell, at least in my opinion, for a player at Deion Kennedy and maybe Dirk in the midfield. And Alyssa, I'm interested. I feel like maybe this is the year where we could even see 3-4 attack players as finalists for this award.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think basically we've been all been waiting for Hogan or Ortega to be finalists. I think there's no doubt in my mind that they would be in the conversation for this award. I just don't know if you can give it to them together since they play so well together. But, you know, on top of those two, I would think Emily Harischuk is in the mix. And then, of course, the Skane train. you know, Katie Hogue with she's got 24 points. Jamie Ortega has 26 points and just broke the all-time career goals at UNC. Harischuk obviously wasn't able to play like we've mentioned, but you know, I swear, I think she scores 4 goals a game, no matter who it's against. And no matter how they're guarding her, I feel like every time I look at a box score, it's 4 goals for Emily Harischuk. And then Izzy Skane, you know, just absolutely went off against Hopkins this weekend. And, you know, just their, those four ability to produce for their teams is just unbelievable. I think Harischuk and Skane are more similarly just, you know, bulldodgers, getting to the cage, forcing, you know, forcing teams to slide to them. And then Katie and Jamie just work so well together. And, you know, they share the ball really well. I think something that we've all been talking about with Hogue is just her ability to see the field. And, you know, to Jamie Ortega's credit, she has 10 assists on the year as well, to add to her 16 goals. So it just really shows that they are able to not only, you know, produce for themselves, but make the players on the field around them better as well, which I think when you think about this award and what it means, that's something to be in the conversation for these two players.
I love that. Skane train went off against Hopkins. Like, who did she not go off on? I feel like last year she went off on North Carolina, opened the season by even breaking her career high against Ohio State. She is, yeah, I mean, all of those players are so fun to watch. And I am curious, like, Hogan and Ortega, the way they play and really complement each other and they play together, is this the year that they could give the Toronton to 2 separate recipients to get? I don't know. We've seen that on the men's side. We've never seen it on the women's side before.
That was the sweetest thing. The brothers.
The brothers.
It was the nicest. The Thompson brothers. And they were so emotional. I will never forget Kayla Traynor and I were just sobbing in our seats watching, and it was the cutest thing. They were just so emotional. So, you know, maybe that'll happen on the girl side.
That was special. Yeah, I mean, who knows? Anything could happen. So, you know, we talked about some of the players really putting themselves in the Toronton conversation, but there are some rookies that have impressed too. I mean, and Rachel, you know, you and I spoke prior to this. It's a tough year just because of, you know, those redshirt seniors that are back and those graduate students and transfers. This year and next year, you know, what we're going to see, the trickle down from this, it's really hard for a freshman to make themselves known in the college game right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the rosters are stacked with women that came back after losing their 2020 season. And then additionally, you know, some of these freshmen didn't get to be on campus in the fall or didn't get to play contact in the fall. So they're really trying to work through being, you know, new to the team, you know, competing with a whole additional class in some cases. So, you know, I think it's an uphill battle for freshmen this year. Obviously, we've seen Caitlin Wardberger make an impact, no surprise to anybody. So I think she'll continue to be a factor for UNC, but it's going to be difficult, you know, for freshmen to really to make an impact this year.
And Alyssa, you know, you mentioned, you know, you have a little bit of bias, you said, but I don't think there's bias at all. She was impressive this weekend. Someone up in Syracuse caught your eye.
Yeah, for sure. Emma Ward, she's also a little shout out from Babylon, New York, which is just a mile away from where I grew up. She, I thought, was just so poised, you know, against a zone like Stony Brook's. It's so easy to kind of jam the ball into the middle. And, you know, even in times where I was like, oh, and I held my breath and they jammed it into Emma, then it just turned out to be she redirected the ball to the crease and they score a goal. And that's just not a play that I think freshmen make often, you know, feeling that pressure, catching with someone on your back and probably giving you a little, I like to call it a little love tap on your back from the defender, you know, and just being able to find the open player. It's just so impressive to me. I think she's still trying to find the back of the cage right now, but it's only a matter of time. I think it's kind of a beast to have your first career goal and just getting over that hump. But the way that she's, you know, distributing the ball and knowing where to go with it was so impressive. And not to mention at least one of her shots against Stony Brook absolutely rung the pipe and almost went back to past the restraining line. So, you know, she's right there. It's not like she's starting the clear for the other team and, you know, with a popcorn shot. But, you know, I think I was very impressed by her. And I think that she will be a really good addition to the Syracuse attack.
The popcorn shot, I like that. I will never forget
if you got stuffed in practice. Gary never yelled at any of us, I felt like. But if you got stuffed and you were running back to the end of the line, he would just say, nice pass, as the goalie would just be clear. I'm like, oh, thanks.
The popcorn. Okay. I like that. Now the new one. You know, I think for me, you know, Rachel, I mean, you mentioned, obviously, Leah Holmes. She's been fun to watch. You know, she had a behind-the-back play. That was in the Iowa Women Instagram, a little highlight play. I love seeing freshmen not play afraid and not be, you know, scared to try new things. And you know, but I think, you know, we mentioned her sister early on as being a Tourcon candidate. I love the way Mackenzie Hogue is playing at Virginia. She has 5 goals, 5 assists, tied for a team-high 10 points through 3 games. You know, I think for a college freshman to come in and see time at attack or see time at defense, you know, you're really mastering and learning the speed of a game at a brand new position. You know, the game is so much faster. There's more rules. You know, you can go through the crease in college. You know, there's a shot clock offensively for an attacker. But for a midfielder to come in and make an impact, it's almost like you have to master both of those games in addition to everything between the 30s. She takes their draws. She has a team high 20 right now. I've been so impressed with her ability to come in, learn the college game, learn the speed of the college game, help Virginia to an undefeated start. You know, I love the way that she's playing right now. And again, I think, you know, the future for the Hogue family, when Katie does depart the college game, is looking bright in Charlottesville. So she's my freshman pick. And, you know, I guess closing thoughts here, you know, we are looking down the pipe of another exciting weekend. We have some Big Ten doubleheaders. You know, Rachel, what's your game of the week or games that you're kind of keeping an eye out on?
The game that I'm super interested in this week is the Rutgers-Michigan matchup. You know, I think Michigan is gaining steam after being quarantined. You know, Molly Garrett, a fifth-year senior, is doing a great job for them. You know, and Rutgers, you know, made a huge jump in the polls, obviously, with 2 wins against Ohio State. So, you know, for me, Cassidy Spills, 18 goals, 2 assists. Just her numbers are pretty wild for Rutgers. So I'm just interested in that Big Ten matchup, how it plays out. You know, we're going to enter the point of the season where, you know, people get their feet under them and we really start to see what they're able to do. You know, and this matchup this weekend, I'm just really excited to see who comes out on top.
I'm staying in the Big Ten, Penn State, Northwestern, you know, the class of the lone undefeated teams in the Big Ten. That's a doubleheader again. I'm so excited to see that, you know, again, like the adjustments made from Friday to Sunday we talked about earlier. And then again, you know, a lot of people in the beginning of the year, Northwestern was top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 program. Penn State started up the year at the latter half of the top 20. They've quickly climbed. I think we're going to see, you know, how good Penn State is this weekend. And I'm excited to see, you know, a youthful Penn State team go up against a pretty vet-heavy Northwestern team. Alyssa, close us out. What's your game or matchups of the week?
Well, I am looking forward to both of those. But I think I'll go with Boston College and UNC. And I feel like we've talked about UNC so much. And I just honestly think that this whole year is going to be basically, well, how are they going to do against UNC? And how are they going to do against UNC? So, you know, we know that UNC has a target on their backs. They know it. And I'm just looking forward to seeing how every ACC team is going to handle them and what they're going to take from previous games and their game plan and their scout and what they're going to try. That's something that's new, and if that's going to work. You know, Rachel Hall is solid in the cage, and obviously Charlotte North from Dallas, Texas, they're both from Texas. Got to give them both a little shout out there and just see how they do. I think we've got a lot of players on BC offensively that can do some damage. And, you know, I'm assuming that Trenchard will mark up on Charlotte North, but then you've got Kara Urbank and Jen Medjid. I'm going to butcher that last name. Sorry, Jen. And then, you know, Belle Smith, who's a freshman that was on the US team. So I just think, let's see how they do against the top team in the country.
I love that. And who are we going to throw at North Carolina next? And who are we going to do next? No, I'm excited for this matchup. Charlotte North heading back down south, not too far from where she started her career at Duke. You know, again, this is fun. This is our first ever podcast in the book. Rachel, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I'm so excited to chat with you, with both of you, and really just kind of continue to dive into the women's landscape. I think we continue to have a unique season here for these athletes, and excited to see what happens. I think we're in for a wild ride.
Alyssa, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. I think this season is obviously one that none of us know what's going to happen next. And that's exciting. And, you know, with everything that COVID throws at us, it's just, you know, we're all just hanging on and seeing what happens. And it's been exciting already, an exciting start, and a lot of games and more to come.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us. The first ever Isle Women Playing Catch Up podcast. If you want us to talk about anything in particular, send us a direct message to @IsleWomen on Twitter. Or you can hit up Rachel, Alyssa, and myself directly @Rachel_DeCecco, @ABMurray01. She's refused to change the Twitter handle. I like it. And @HQCraig. We will be back talking a bit more about the women's game in just a couple weeks.
Woo!
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.